Modern Mystics with your co-hosts, Dawn Fleming and Linda Robach, who are here to offer you a deeper perspective of what is really going on and how you can disconnect from the chaos and plug into a higher consciousness.
Welcome to Two Modern Mystics. I'm Dawn Fleming, and I'm so happy that another modern mystic, Bridget Hughes, is joining us today. And she will be sharing with us keys and insights to unlocking the heart of healing. But before we get into today's topic, I want to introduce my co-host, Linda Robach. Linda is my good friend, an incredible light and mystic healer. I've known Linda for over 25 years. We've had a lot of great experiences together, and we've taught classes together, and just wonderful journeys. And I've just witnessed Linda sharing her light and her love and her wisdom in helping many people to find their own truth. And it is my honor to be doing this show with her today. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Dawn, and thank you, my amazing friend and fellow light traveler. And I want to thank you for showing up in my life during this amazing time on our planet. I also want our listeners to know that this radio show is an example of your passion for helping people to remember their true nature, their unlimited potential, and their oneness with all of creation. What a blessing you are, not only to those of us who know you personally, but to the entire world.
Thank you. And wow.
And so today, I'm going to have the privilege of introducing Bridget Hughes, who's with us today. And her first book, Unlocking the Heart of Healing, was just released this past December. And we're so happy that Bridget has chosen our show to be one of the early promoters of her seminal work. Believe me, you will be hearing and seeing a lot more of her in the future. A little bit about Bridget. She's a licensed acupuncturist with a master's degree from the Maryland University of Integrative Health. She also holds national board certification as a clinical hypnotherapist and is a certified Qigong instructor. And her Qigong is amazing. I've taken that as well, a couple of her classes. She is co-founder of Healing Point, which is a limited liability company in Severna Park, Maryland, and also of Healing Point Acupuncture and Healing Arts in the Cancer Resource Center at Howard County General Hospital and Johns Hopkins Medicine in Columbia, Maryland. So before going on a semi-sabbatical from private practice to write and teach, and that's been a few years ago. How long, Bridget? You're here.
Yeah, it's been about 3.5 years now.
That's what I thought. But she was named a 2010 and 2011 favorite doc in Chesapeake Family Magazine. She's well-loved in this area. Bridget, though, was once a child patient with cerebral palsy at the Kennedy Krieger Institute. So talk about full circle. Bridget healed beyond what was considered possible, and later was even a participant of the Kennedy Krieger Institute Complementary and Alternative Medicine Advisory Committee. So she's also a past member of the Kennedy Krieger Institute Ethics Committee. All of that is a mouthful for me. I love Bridget so much. So, Bridget, welcome.
Yay. Thank you so much, Linda, and thank you, Dawn. It is a total honor to be here with you and to be sharing and a part of all that you're doing in the world to promote healing and transformation.
Well, I'd like to start with a first question that's been on my mind. What experiences led you to write Unlocking the Heart of Healing, your book, and how did you come up with that title?
You know, it's so many experiences, you know, to get the motivation to actually sit down and write something. There were many events along the way, many of which I share in the book and some of which I will share today. But what emerged over time was this great curiosity that I had to find the commonalities when healing exceeds what is expected or what people think is possible. And I seemed to have this strange series of events that continued to happen to me. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized that not only are there commonalities, but things that people can learn and do to increase the likeliness that unlikely things happen. And I know we were talking recently, Linda, and you had particularly had some interest in this story that I didn't talk so much about in the book, how on earth this whole cerebral palsy thing came to be, because as you know here with me, I'm walking and talking all things that the doctor said weren't going to happen when they looked at my early brain scan. So I'll tell just a tiny bit of that story, because really that's sort of the, you know, one of the earliest experiences in life. It was when I was 6 months old that I got the diagnosis, and my parents had related the event to a vaccine bundle I had just gotten, but the belief that vaccines could be related to such things was about as popular in the 70s as it is now. So that notion was dismissed. And the doctors told my parents that according to the brain scan they were looking at, that it was highly unlikely that I would walk or talk, that there had been so much damage in the left lobe of my brain. And I jokingly call my parents my first mentors in anything is possible, because just like the doctors had dismissed their observation, they enthusiastically dismissed what the doctors told them and basically set out to, you know, figure out what was possible within the context of this crazy diagnosis, and basically just refused to accept that the outcome that they were given. And my parents went on to do some pretty amazing things. They're considered standard practice now for brain injured or stroke patients, you know, things like getting the patient to crawl, which my parents used all kinds of creative ways to get me to do. But it was pretty radical back in the 70s because that research really wasn't out yet. And the advice my parents had been given was, leave me alone, don't stress that poor child out. But anyway, what they were tapping into and didn't even know is the amazing capacity of our brain for neuroplasticity and rewiring. And so even though I've got only a half of a lobe on the left side of my brain, all the things that were thought not to be possible, walking, talking, you know, I do pretty well. And so
amazing.
And so that early experience just sort of stayed with me, and, you know, that spirit of, well, if something's going wrong, find a creative way around it. Much later, another one of my mentors in Anything is Possible actually really got the impossible to happen, and I ended up learning how to salsa dance, which even I had thought was out of the question. I was very uncoordinated. And then after that experience, it went on and progressed so far in dancing that I ended up one night, and this story I do tell in the book, dancing with two professional-level salsa dancers in the middle of a smoky nightclub and having this experience, and it was, I call it a numinous experience because it was so deeply spiritually moving, but it was also rather shocking physically because in an instant, my sense of being separate from others disappeared, and I had this full body knowing of an all connectedness, and suddenly went from being able to dance pretty well to being able to completely keep up with these complete athlete, professional level dancers. And it was one of those shocking moments of realizing, oh my gosh, we have these capacities that are available and we aren't tapping into them every day. So what on earth was that? How did it happen? Is it repeatable? And how do I avail myself to that? Because what was so obvious in that moment was that it was something about me that was causing, you know, the reducing valve, right? It was me that was clenching down or contracting or closing myself. And in an instant when that freed, I suddenly had a different state of awareness, a different consciousness, and a completely different physical capacity. And so that's really when my inquiry into, you know, the heart of healing and how do we understand that, it was so evident to me in that moment that, you know, I even had the sense of that I had healing ability available in that moment, you know, and in the middle of a nightclub, so it wasn't there wasn't a use for it right in that second. But just this huge awareness that there's so many untapped capacities that we have. And then a final experience that really pushed me to the point where I decided to write about all of these things happened just a few years after that. I had a 400-degree glass oven-safe dish explode in my hand and shoot 5 shards of glass into my eye, where with the heat and the projectile force, they fused instantly to the aqueous humor. And by that point, I had become so interested in, you know, our untapped capacities for healing that my response to this was probably different than what's typical. Instead of panicking, which I think would have been the very typical response, I immediately started practicing some of the practices that I talk about in the book. You know, I talk about a practice I call a feeling mantra, but it's a practice where, just like with a sound mantra, a sound is used over and over to bring about transformative change. In my book, I describe using a feeling in a way, and tapping into our abilities for neural rewiring and to be able to access a different state of being, even as our circumstances are particularly challenging and hard, which when you've got 5 shards of hot glass jutting out of your eye, there's definitely an invitation, you know, to many other states of being. But because I had been practicing at that point, you know, for a few years of moving, you know, consciously into a feeling mantra or a different state of being, one of the first things I noticed is that I wasn't afraid. The adrenaline that arose with the event had me actually feeling a little bit elated, because I was just absolutely certain that I was having the opportunity to put all the concepts I've been working on so hard to test. And sure enough, we got to the hospital, got whisked in ahead of, you know, probably 35 people in the waiting room, because it's very impressive when you have an eye full of glass. And the doctor took about 45 minutes prying out the shards. And when he was finished, he called in a second doctor. And, you know, the whole time I had had an opportunity to do my inner practice, my inner feeling mantra, you know, because the adrenaline was firing. Every so often my mind would be very tempted to think I might lose my sight, or, oh, this is terrible, or, oh, this feels awful, you know, but really instead just bringing myself back in my practice. And when the second doctor was sent in to confirm that there were no more shards of glass in the eye, she sort of stared there, dumbfounded, looking at me, looking at the chart, looking back, because I'd had not only the doctor working for quite some time to remove the shards, but also putting dye in the eye, looking through ultraviolet light, and irrigating the eye. And the second doctor said, from all that you've been through, your eye should be bloodshot with lacerations on the cornea. And instead, she said, I can't even tell which eye it was without looking at the chart. She said, it's almost as if the eye healed immediately behind the work that was done on it. And because of this different state of being that I was in, it was exactly what had happened. You know, so many times with our health, what we don't think of is if we're stressed or worried or upset, we're, you know, clenching off our circulation, we're running the stress chemicals through our body, and so healing slows or takes longer. And yet there's traditions around the world, traditions particularly in Southeast Asia, where, you know, rapid wound healing is a phenomenon that's well known, well recognized, well documented, where a person will put themselves in a spiritual trance and then do things like feed a spear through their cheeks or hang themselves by barbs on their back. And then when the time for coming out of trance nears and they remove the barbs or the spears, they hardly bleed and heal quickly. Mm. And so again, it's these instances of being in a different state of heart and a different state of mind that lead to a different state of body where healing that shouldn't be possible becomes available because how we're thinking and feeling is different. And so that's so much my passion, and it's that passion to, you know, share that knowing that overrode all of the obstacles and hurdles to getting a book finished.
Well, and I think I remember you saying that you didn't even have any pain medication or anesthetic.
It's right. The nurses were chasing me around in the halls and in the hospital offering me Percocets and Valiums and insisting to me, if you don't take these, the shock is going to wear off and the pain is going to hit like a truck. You need to get ahead of the pain and take the medications now. But I was absolutely sure that wasn't going to happen. I mean, I know lots of mind-body practices for controlling pain from my hypnosis background, but I wasn't even needing to use them. I had ended up in such a, you know, they thought I was in shock or some altered state of consciousness in that direction, and I was very much in an altered state of consciousness, mm-hmm. But it was an expansive one. And, you know, there was no efforting to it for that to happen. It was, and many people think, well, if something like that happens, yeah, I need to calm down. But actually, the fear and the intense adrenaline that fired because of the circumstance, I actually think that the biochemistry of that synergized with this state of heart and mind I was practicing and allowed for this altered state. I think if I had been a really good meditator and really good at staying calm or something like that, it might not have catapulted me into that magical state where the rapid wound healing happened.
Well, Bridget, let's move on to our next question.
Yeah.
How would you describe Unlocking the Heart of Healing to someone who has not read it?
The book is a account of my experiences and some experiences of my patients and my students, chronicling a lot of instances where healing occurred that was considered unusual or unlikely. And the common factor that I found running through many of those instances has to do with an inner state, a state of heart, that I say unlocks what I call our inner molecules of medicine. People don't often think about our body as being a pharmacy stocked with medicines, but our body makes medicine all the time. And most people's first thought when something goes wrong is to go get medicine. And I'm petitioning for the fact that people can learn, in addition to whatever medicine they might need to get out externally, but to make internal molecules of medicine by engaging the heart-mind-body connection to heal. And the book, you know, not only pulls from stories of people who've found out something about how that happens, but also ancient wisdom traditions and then the most cutting-edge modern science I could find to make sense of, you know, the keys of how to unlock these dormant resources we have for healing.
Mm.
Well, and what you're saying about you know, engaging those molecules of the body, because as a medical intuitive, you know, I can dialogue with the body, and the body dialogues back and wants us to participate in the healing process, not always just to turn it all over, but to participate in it. And I just think all the things you're talking about allow us to participate in our own healing process. So that's incredible.
It really is, and I'm intrigued, though, Bridget. What do you mean, or could you kind of explain a little more when you say dormant resources? for healing.
Mm-hmm.
It's dormant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the dormant resources are the ones we aren't using, either because we don't know how to use them or we don't even know that we have the resources. You know, I encounter it so often in my acupuncture practice that the first mindset is to always to seek outside help. And, you know, it's sort of a last resort when people show up for acupuncture, but even there, the mindset is often, will you fix me? Very infrequently is it to look inside to awaken resources for healing. And yet we come equipped with the standard issue equipment, you know, to have amazing inner resources. And so, you know, some of the medicines our body makes are things like immune complexes and neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine and pain-relieving complexes, endorphins, insulin, oxytocin, you know, so many of the inner molecules of medicine. And to get the prescription filled, I find sometimes is so much easier than people think when they learn how to, you know, move into a different state of heart and mind, irrespective of the circumstances. You know, one of the research studies that I love that very simply points to what I'm saying, it was a study done by the Institute of Heart Math, and they were using an immune system marker called salivary IgA. And the researchers found that with just 5 minutes of experiencing compassion in the lab, that just random subjects off the street were able to change their level of salivary IgA so that they were improving their immune system by 5 minutes of a state of compassion, whereas 5 minutes in a state of anger, and they could lower the salivary IgA. But what's so fascinating to me about the study is how they were able to consistently have subjects enter into states of compassion and anger in the lab, because the first thing they did was they tried using movie clips, and they had the subjects watch film clips of war for anger and film clips of Mother Teresa for compassion, but they found that the results were inconsistent because not everyone feels angry when they see war. Some feel hopeless, overwhelmed, dejected. And so finally, after struggling with this for some time, they finally had a novel idea, and they simply began to ask the subjects, think about something that makes you feel compassionate, or think about something that makes you angry. And universally, the subjects were able to do this. I mean, it's just amazing how common sense, how simple this is. So if we're thinking about our own inner pharmacy, you know, and thinking, wow, with 5 minutes of compassion, I can actually increase the activity of my immune system. Or with 5 minutes of anger, I could decrease, you know, suddenly the self-responsibility. Some people are absolutely terrified by that. For me, I'm liberated by it. I think that's the most incredibly freeing possibility that there is. But there, it's a definite mindset shift to think, wow, I'm really influencing the biochemical and electromagnetic soup within me, and I'm a big player, you know, in the health of my own body. And, you know, so one of the questions that I have that I find a lot too, though, is that, you know, if anger drops the immune complexes, then does that mean that we should never be angry? But I think that as time goes on, there'll be more and more research into this, that there are actually sometimes, you know, there's a big difference in our body between the anger that happens when somebody cuts us off in traffic, you know, a rude driver, you know, versus the anger that we might feel if we sit and dwell for a little while on the fact that there's GMOs in our food and you know, pollution in the water. And, you know, the type of anger that ignites a campaign to go out and make a change has, I'm sure, a very different physiology in the body. So when we're working with all of these things, we don't want to, you know, learn meditation practices that take us into complacency. We want to, you know, make the kind of inner changes that lead to empowerment. And, you know, one researcher working on this that I think is really interesting is Amy Cuddy. She's a psychologist with a 2012 TED Talk, which is one of the most viewed ones. And in her TED Talk, she talks about how what she calls power posing leads to, a positive increase in our, I think it's our hormones and, you know, several other markers that she was looking at. And so if power posing has these great benefits, then empowered living is going to be even better.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes. Wow. I like that term, empowered living, by using our biochemistry to help empower us and help keep that healing mode going in our life. I can imagine just the impact that would have on day-to-day things like blood pressure and, you know, cholesterol, just using our emotions to keep that health and well-being and balance going. So another question that I have is, can you tell us about a key factor that can be used to activate healing?
Absolutely. What I consider the most important factor to activate healing is love, which sounds obvious. But what I'm most interested is in what love means when the circumstances of our life invite us to some other state, any other state than love,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we're all challenged with this. If we're violated or trespassed or disrespected or lied to or stolen from, you know, and if we think about it that way, does that mean if things like that happen to us, we're then stuck with the expected emotions, anger or violation, and then the ill health effects from these molecules of misery? And if we aren't stuck with that, then how can we authentically transform ourselves to a new state of consciousness where we aren't condoning evil or harmful or thoughtless behavior, yet can still stay in an authentic space of love in our hearts, you know, even if or as these things happen? And this has been demonstrated. Some of the people through history who have really interested me, you know, there are many, but two that really stand out in my mind are Corrie ten Boom and Brother Yun, and I'll just tell briefly about both of them. And they both happen to be within the Christian tradition, but I've found examples of people through every tradition who are, you know, living by these principles in these ways. But Corrie ten Boom, you know, she was a survivor of the concentration camp. And one of the first things that she did, and by the way, she was treated pretty horribly, you know, more horribly than most, because when she had been captured, she was found to have been hiding lots of Jews behind a wall in her house. So her treatment was even worse than the average concentration camp victim. But by a scribe error, instead of being sent for execution, she was released. It's an incredible story. But the first thing that she did when she was released is that she went home and began to erect rehabilitation centers for people who had been traumatized by their treatment in the concentration camps. And about 4 months after that, the war had then ended. She went back to the concentration camps and set up rehabilitation centers for the Nazi tormentors in the very centers. I mean, it's just amazing that mm-hmm. someone would think to do this. But one of the incredible stories from her is a moment where one of the former Nazis, who had been particularly brutal to her and her sister who died in the camp, approached her with, you know, sort of a smug look on his face and with his hand extended, waiting for the handshake he expected, you know, now that it was all over and he expected her forgiveness. And, you know, she said this feeling of absolute hatred went through her body. But she prayed for, help. And in an instant, she said, this feeling just flashed in her heart and shot down her hand. And as she extended her hand to, you know, shake with him, in that instant, she was completely free and experienced unconditional love for this person. I mean, that's just a completely different level of consciousness. And then Brother Yun, he was a Christian missionary in China who had this incredible ability to talk about Jesus in a way that people would just quit what they were doing and follow him. So he quickly became declared an enemy of the state for confusing the Chinese people. And he was arrested several times. And while he was imprisoned, he was treated quite brutally. I mean, kicked until bones shattered, smeared in feces, wrapped in lice blankets, starved, withheld water. Just the worst treatment you could possibly think of. And he said that even as he would be being kicked, you know, just within millimeters of life, he was just filled with the Holy Spirit, as he described it. And as he beamed up at his tormentors with this feeling of the Holy Spirit filling his heart and just complete compassion that they did not have that experience themselves, you know, it was reported that two-thirds of his tormentors quit their jobs because they simply just couldn't keep kicking someone and beating someone who looked at them like that. And eventually he escaped a maximum security prison, which is considered impossible, so no one quite knows how that happened. And then he's been lecturing and teaching for many years since, luckily outside of China. Mm-hmm. But that's been a real... call to a different level to me, because it's not the standard reaction we have when we've been violated or hurt or trespassed. So it's a new possibility available.
It certainly is, and we're challenged to hold that high mindset. Could you give us some help in how we can develop an internal mindset that would keep us healthy?
It's practice.
Well, yeah,
practice.
And you were going to say that. So, but tell us a little bit about it.
I will. I have an example from recently that might be a help. But life gives us so many invitations to practice. I've been practicing these things for 7 years now, and I still find many opportunities. And one that happened just recently, where I really held Brother Yun as my mentor, there was an experience where somebody that I have some dealings with turned something I said around and then made some inflammatory remarks about me to a whole team of people with immediate repercussions for my business. And you know, if this had happened years before, I would have been instantly just filled with anxiousness, upset, indignation, trying to defend my honor, trying to right the wrong. You know, I just would have been, you know, so disturbed inside with it. And instead, in this moment, I realized that there was a choice available. A few days later, one of the members of the team came to me and said that, you know, basically nobody in that meeting believed what was said. We all knew that what was going on was this twisted thing, you know, but nobody wanted to stand up and say anything because we didn't want to be the next target, you know. And my inner practice was, I really thought a lot about Brother Yun. Can I just move into that state where I can be, you know, his term was filled with the Holy Spirit. Mine might be a little different than that, but filled with, you know, whatever that feeling is or that state is, that unshakable connection. And not long after that, I ran into this person and just had a split second of eye contact, and I really was authentically in that space, and I knew that that was shining through my eyes. And you know, the person quickly looked away and left the room. But I didn't think much more about it. But then the woman who had told me that no one in the meeting believed what was said came to me again and said, "You won't believe this, but the woman who said those things about you just came to me this week and said, you know, I realize I'm really deficient in my spirituality, and I'm wondering if you can give me some advice on that." And I just think that that's such an absolutely profound thing because, you know, if I had tried to defend or correct or write this or wagged my finger and said you've done something wrong, you know, just like Brother Yun's tormentors, they would have kicked him harder. They would have hit harder. Instead, the way I took it was, you know, if a wrong happened, there's really nothing I can do to right it, but doors close and doors open every day. I'm going to just live gracefully in an open state of heart anyway. And in whatever way, you know, that penetrated, some change was sparked there. And still there's no change in how it directly affected. She's had no sort of different contact with me or no resolution with me, but it doesn't even matter to me because if that circumstance allowed for a moment even for her to realize there's something different possible in my own heart and, you know, this sort of being all wound up and anxious and tight with ego and drunk on power or whatever it is occluding this state of heart that's available, then that's the greatest gift of the situation.
Wow. So that is just really great wisdom for all of us to learn from, because a lot of times our automatic response is to get into that negative stuff, which then we know makes us physically feel bad. So just being able to take that higher road and align in that energy, how wonderful and how that's going to support us. So, you know, I know Linda and I, we've done a lot of energy work and healing over the years. And, you know, we see people healing at different rates, some very quickly, some very slowly. So with your experiences and your research in writing this book, do you see that can extreme health challenges heal quickly, or does it take time with the process that you're sharing?
Oh, I love this question. When I first got interested in the power of the heart to heal, you know, it was from some of these events in my own life where things reversed very quickly or instantly. And there were two early inspirations in my research to understand what on earth was going on to allow this type of healing to happen. One from the ancient Hawaiian tradition and one from the ancient Chinese tradition, and I'll read them both because I think they're so rich. The first came from Keith Varnum, who is an author that I was able to contact and ask him where this came from. He actually told me it was 40 years, well, this was almost 8 years ago, so now close to 50 years ago from his Hawaiian kahuna shaman. But what Varnum wrote was, the ancient Hawaiians assert there are two chemical reactions within the human body that can accomplish reconnection with source oneness. The first is the, quote, sacred tear beneath our sadness and hopelessness. That, to me, is important because he's not saying life is tidy and wonderful, right? I mean, we've all got things to bear, sometimes pretty serious. Beneath that tear lies the second chemical reaction, said to be more powerful than all the healing agents known to humankind. It comes, quote, out of the blue with the power of a jackhammer, shattering the seriousness of the entire human estate, a power instantly freeing and balancing to all the body's chemistry. This is the power of laughter. When it comes in this manner, it comes through the na'au, gut level, and will pierce the hopelessness of any situation or attitude. It is not a power to be taken lightly, for the ancient Hawaiians say it holds the chemistry of immortality and will instantly heal any terminal disease. It's said to be the laughter of God, which shatters the ridiculousness of hopelessness.
Wow.
And so that, I mean, that language is so powerful, holds the chemistry of immortality, instantly heal terminal disease. But then what was so shocking to me is that the language was almost identical from the ancient Chinese tradition. This, what I'll read next, came from Dr. Jeffrey Yuen, who's a highly respected practitioner of Chinese medicine. And also at the time he wrote this, he was teaching a seminar called Chinese Medicine and Cancer Care, and he was the head of the integrative medicine department at Sloan Kettering. So he's, you know, this wasn't some woo-woo statement. And so this comes from the Chinese medicine oral tradition, talking about cancer here. He says, strengthen the organs that are necessary to deal with phlegm, lungs to expel, spleen to transform, kidneys to dissolve. And then the instance of what they call spontaneous healing, miracles, when the heart vaporizes. So like a science fiction movie, one day the cancer is just miraculously gone, vaporization of phlegm. That comes from the heart. See if you can open your heart to hope as well as open the heart of your client. And I think Brother Yun and Corey Ten Boom are two amazing examples of this, because both of them, the mistreatment that they survived in the concentration camps, they both should have died in there or at least come out with horrible health problems. And instead, they both have gone on to quite healthily, you know, it takes a lot of energy to be speaking all over the world, but they both went on to do that. And Corrie Ten Boom into her 90s before she died, and Brother Yun still alive today. So there's something to this inner chemistry that happens when the heart is right. So that said, you know, some disease processes change slowly or not at all as well. But one of the things I've learned is that if we learn to live in this elevated state of heart, whether the body heals, whether we must bear an illness, or whether even we're dying, if we're in that state of heart, then we're living life at its richest and most full.
And well, if we can do that. You know, this makes me wonder, have you had any of your readers that have read your book reported an unusual healing?
It's actually been so fun, a stream of emails coming in. Some of them, my favorites, there have been some great emails that have come in about people who experienced an injury and remembered the story of my glass in the eye, and so they remembered not to panic and, you know, to sort of be in a meditative state and realize that their healing, you know, proceeded faster than expected. So that was really gratifying. Another woman contacted me to tell me that now anytime she notices a symptom in her body, she retrains herself. She picks up the book so that she can move into a different state of consciousness about it. I thought that was really neat.
That could just be the prop.
Exactly.
Her to it. Yes.
Exactly. And eventually she will retrain herself enough she won't need to look. But what she's acknowledging is so true, is that our default reaction to injury or illness is not usually to tap our inner resources. I've had some feedback. One gave me a real shock. I was sort of like on edge for a few days after this one email came in, because a woman contacted me to tell me that her sister, who was experiencing acute asthma and pertussis, had decided that the medical system failed her and that she was going to follow some of the what she called the more spiritual methods I described in the book, and that she was going to quit her meds and use these approaches, which, I mean, I didn't say quit the meds in the book. And in fact, the story she was relating to, I was on medications when I was doing the spiritual practice. What I recommend is people add heart, mind, body meditation. So for a few days, I was sort of white knuckling it, like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to this woman? But then the sister emailed back again and said a complete miracle had happened, and that her sister was well. And normally pertussis is a lengthy cure, I mean, a long time to heal, and, you know, complex in treatment. So I have no idea what happened and how it happened, and you know, it's you can't account for something like that with the rational, linear, analytical model. So there's no telling if someone with a similar circumstance would have that same result. But what it did for me was give that reminder that we have this vast, untapped resource for healing. And when someone finds a way to unlock that mysterious resource and has an outcome that defies logic, I'm over here doing the happy dance. And, you know, one of my personal, you know, passions with this book, it means so much to me when people use it and their health improves. But to me, there's an even greater ripple, because we've all heard these reports that, you know, every medicine we take ends up in the drinking water. And I have a lot of patients on chemotherapy, and they're told not to share a bathroom with anyone, especially small children, for 6 months, because so many of the toxins are passing out. So anytime we can do something that, you know, working with the doctor that helps us lower our medications, there's a downstream effect for everyone that's a benefit to all.
Absolutely.
So, Bridget, thank you so much for being on our show and just sharing, you know, all this great knowledge and wisdom, your experiences and your energy with all of our listeners. Your work on this planet is very much appreciated, and, you know, this is just at the very beginning. When your book gets out there, it's just going to be helping so many. So we thank you for helping us unlock the heart of healing. And I want the listeners to check out Bridget's book, Unlocking the Heart of Healing. She helps people learn how to unlock those hidden or dormant inner resources for healing. And she talked about a lot of those today on the show. And, you know, it includes that inner molecule of medicine by the cutting edge heart, mind, body meditation techniques. Those are all in the book. And we know that meditation is a powerful adjunct to healing the body, and that once you know how to really do it. And also in the book, Bridget shares stories and examples from her patients and offers a guided meditation experience that she calls a feeling mantra to teach us how. And I guess to teach us how to move into that state that you were talking about, which is so important. So if you're interested in getting a copy of Bridget's book, it can be found at Amazon. And it can also be purchased on Bridget's website at www.unlockingtheheartofhealing.com. And I'll say that once again, www.unlockingtheheartofhealing.com.
So, Bridget, is there anything else you want to add or to let people know before we close?
Well, I want to thank you both so much. And if anyone is interested in exploring the topics further, we also have classes, seminars here locally in Maryland, online learning, and even phone consultation. I've had a really amazing time lately with a new emergence of, you know, different sorts of people in our Qigong classes than you'd expect, executives, organizational leaders, and a lot of them have been, you know, telling me that they're absolutely hungry for this information, and it's the only place in their life that they're getting this conversation. So I invite anyone to join us, you know, I find that most people are hungry for a greater level of heart and a more profound awareness of the heart-mind-body connection, and for increased skills and tools for relating to the challenges and hardships of life. So please join us locally or online. And thank you both, Dawn and Linda, so much for the honor of being here today.
Oh, well,
you're
it has
welcome.
Been truly a pleasure and a joy. And before we close, I did want to bring some announcements so people are aware of what's going on. Again, I'm going to start off by saying in the Maryland area. So looking forward to the weekend of May 15th, 16th, and 17th, several things happening. There's going to be a Scott Grace concert. Many people have heard him. They love him. He brings humor. His topic is going to be on healing the sick, raising the dead, and forgiving your mother. And it's done with humor and tender. Talk about opening a heart. It's very heart-opening. We'll be tapping and doing some other things. But there's a concert on the 15th, and the workshop is on the 16th. And then on May 17th is what we're calling ACT Connect. And ACT stands for Community of Transformation. I'll give you the website in a second. But it's going to be a fun event where you get to meet and find out what others are doing in our community. So if you're in or close to Maryland, come and participate in the fair. You'll have a chance to network with others. So again, I will give you ACT's website. Tickets for Scott Grace can be found there too. It's www.actannapolis, all one word, actannapolis.org. So hopefully we'll be seeing you, and you can share that you heard Bridget and our interview with her today. So, Dawn, what do you have coming up?
Well, I don't have any events coming up, but I just wanted to kind of promote two books. One of my books is Heat Rising, Survive and Thrive Through Menopause, and it just gives a lot of resources for women going through that phase in life. A lot of people feel really alone and resourceless, and this book lets you know that you're not alone, and it gives you lots of resources in dealing with the challenges and also making the shifts that you really truly want to make to get your energy back in life. And then my other book is Chakra Empowerment, 24 Days of Transformation, and it just tells you about the chakras and how to work with the chakra energies and how they may be blocked and how you can get them unblocked to help support the life that you want. So I'm just going to promote those today, and I'm just going to move into our closing. Once again, Bridget, we just want to thank you so much for all that you've shared with us, and you know, hopefully our readers can begin working with centering in that love space right away. I mean, you've given us some tidbits there to truly go and work with and shape that inner space that we're in. So thank you for sharing and for making our planet a better place and for giving us a way to truly return to wholeness. And I just want to thank our listeners for tuning in and for sharing our shows with others. We greatly appreciate you helping us to share and to spread this light on our planet. Namaste.
Namaste.